When you board a commercial flight, you implicitly trust the autopilot, but that trust is built on a very specific mechanical reality,
Oh,
right?
absolutely. It's a binary.
Yeah, exactly. It as either engaged, calculating the telemetry and keeping the plane level, or you hear that distinct physical clunk, the system disengages, and the human pilot physically takes the yoke.
Right, there is zero ambiguity in a cockpit about who is responsible for the aircraft at any given millisecond. The hierarchy is just hard-coded right into the hardware.
Right, but when you look at how we are integrating artificial intelligence into our daily workflows right now, that clean, hard-coded handoff, I mean, it just doesn't exist.
No, not at all. We're operating in this incredibly murky transition phase.
Exactly. The lines between human judgment and machine output are entirely blurred. So, welcome to this deep dive into Conversational AI Watch, issue number 150, dated September 8th, 2026.
And a quick thank you to our sponsor for this deep dive, Clinician Assist Inc., for making this possible.
Yes, thank you to them. Our mission today is to unpack six highly connected stories from today's issue that all ask one massive question. As these systems get smarter, who actually stays in charge of the machine, and more importantly, who answers when it inevitably fails?
It is a huge question for you, our listener, to think about. And our sources today range from global student test scores to a literal life or death survival situation.
Yeah, it's quite the spectrum. Okay, let's unpack this.
Well, setting a calm baseline here, the through line connecting all of these stories today is really how we humans negotiate trust with artificial intelligence.
Right, that cognitive offloading. Let's start by looking at that at the earliest possible stage, which is our schools.
The testing data.
Yes. So the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, they released their PISA 2025 results this morning.
And this is a massive data set.
Oh, huge. They tested 760,000 15-year-olds across 91 countries. But the big deal this year is they finally isolated the chatbot variable.
Which we've been waiting for.
Right. They basically asked these students, how often do you use a chatbot every day to draft your writing? And students who do that, they scored 480.7 in science.
And the non-users.
The kids who almost never use it scored 509.4.
Wow.
Yeah, we are looking at a nearly 29-point gap between the everyday users and the non-users.
That is a staggering gap. To put that in perspective, the OECD's metric basically says a 22-point gap equates to over a full year of lost learning.
A full year.
Yeah, so students heavily relying on bots are testing more than a year behind. But what's fascinating here is the OECD's explicit warning about this.
The correlation versus causation thing.
Exactly. This data is correlation, not causation. It might just be about who reaches for the machine and why. A deeply disengaged student might just be more likely to use the bot to cheat.
Right, which brings up the nuance in the report. Because the twist here is that the students who used AI, quote, to help me learn about once a week,
Right, the weekly users.
yeah, they scored 501.3. So they basically kept pace with the non-users who were at 499.0.
That is a crucial distinction.
It gets better. Students who were explicitly taught how to assess AI quality, they actually scored 14 points higher than the ones who weren't.
Wow, okay. So it really is about the implementation.
Yeah, I mean, it does like using a calculator to do the math for you versus using the calculator to check your work. One makes you lazy, the other makes you precise.
That is a great way to frame it. And if you look at the education market, the product that will ultimately survive is the one that teaches students to check the AI's work, not the other way around.
Right. But that nuance from the OECD kind of clashes with what school districts are actually doing. Because while they ask for nuance, the two largest school districts in the US just decided they aren't waiting around for it.
Yeah, the bans are back.
Big time. On the exact same Wednesday, New York City banned student-facing generative AI through eighth grade.
And Los Angeles.
Los Angeles Unified instituted a one-year moratorium for 378,000
That
students.
is massive.
And in LA, it was wild. A network filter called Lightspeed was activated so abruptly that even the school board didn't know.
You are kidding. The board didn't know.
Nope. Parents literally showed up to a board meeting with prepared protest speeches demanding a ban. And they had to change them into thank you speeches on the spot because the district announced the filter was already live.
That is an incredibly aggressive rollout. Both of these districts had previously banned ChatGPT in late 2022 and early 2023, then unbanned it, and now they're reversing course again.
Right. But I have to push back on their logic here. If the OECD just proved that using AI weekly to learn actually keeps kids on track, aren't these districts throwing the baby out with the bathwater by issuing these blanket bans?
It definitely looks like it from a pedagogical side. But neutrally speaking, this flip-flopping really highlights the immense pressure on AI vendors.
How do you mean?
Well, think about the purchasing power of LA Unified. Vendors now have exactly 1 year to prove to these districts that their software can beat that 509 test score.
Ah, so it's a leverage play.
Exactly. If the vendors can't prove their tools help learning, they lose out on massive, massive contracts.
Yeah.
The districts are forcing the market to adapt.
Okay, so that local panic. But since blanket bans are messy at the state level, Virginia is trying to actually write the rules of engagement.
Yes, the Virginia rulebook.
Which has some interesting backstory. Two Virginia chatbot bills already died. And they died because the Trump administration's December 2025 executive order threatened to pull broadband funding for any states with, quote, onerous AI laws.
Right. Basically saying, pass a strict AI law and you lose the money to lay fiber optic cable.
Yeah, huge leverage. So instead of a bill, Virginia's legislative research arm, JCLS, spent the summer writing a 49-page report. They vote on it October 8th.
And they took a really interesting angle, right?
Yeah. They concluded that regulating by category like a companion AI versus a general AI is totally useless. Instead, they want to regulate design.
Design mandates. Like what?
So things like mandating break reminders every 2 hours, friction-free exits so the bot doesn't trap you, and default restrictive privacy for minors.
Which all sound relatively reasonable for consumer protection.
But then they want to prevent bots from flattering users or pretending to be human.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Here's where it gets really interesting. How do you even begin to legislate flattery? I mean, is a chatbot suddenly breaking the law if it tells me I had a great idea?
It is a bizarre legal line to try and draw. How do you prove algorithmic flattery in a court?
You can't.
Right. And that points to the structural flaw in Virginia's plan. They state that incident reports for these AI violations would go to the Department of Health.
The Department of Health.
Yes. And the report itself openly admits Virginia currently has no state agency with the technical expertise to actually enforce an AI law.
Oh my gosh. So they want to regulate flattery, but they don't even have the tech staff to enforce it.
Exactly. It's a fundamental mismatch between policy ambition and technical reality.
Wow. Okay, so while politicians try to dictate how AI behaves, the tech giants are currently in a standoff over who even gets to let the AI in the door.
Yeah, the walled gardens are getting higher.
Yeah.
Apple has an event tomorrow, and their new Siri AI is designed to act inside other apps.
Right, but it's hitting a massive wall.
Yes, it is. Google hasn't updated Gmail to work with it. Meta hasn't connected WhatsApp.
And Amazon. Amazon will let Siri search for paper towels, but they won't let it actually place the order.
Exactly. They are blocking the transaction.
I mean, it's like hiring the most brilliant personal assistant in the world, but none of your friends or your bank will actually pick up the phone when they call.
That is exactly what it feels like. If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is a platform war.
A new one, yeah.
Right. Apple definitively won the App Store war. Google won the operating system war. And now they are fighting over the ultimate assistant.
Because whoever controls the assistant controls the user.
Exactly. Google and Meta are deliberately starving Apple's Siri AI to protect their own direct relationships with consumers. They don't want Siri to be the middleman.
Right, which totally makes sense from a corporate standpoint. But let's connect that corporate battle over assistance to what happens in the real world when we actually do follow an AI assistant's advice.
Oh, this is the Mount Shasta story.
Yes, and it is wild. Three young men from Roseville used Google A's Gemini to pack for a hike up Mount Shasta's Clear Creek route.
Okay, and Gemini is a language model, not a mountaineer.
Right. And Gemini advised far less food and water than required for an 8-hour ascent. Because they were underfueled, they moved slow, and they completely missed the noon turnaround rule.
Wait, how late were they?
They missed it by 7 hours. They summited at 7 p.m.
At 7 p.m.? That is incredibly dangerous.
Yeah. So they descend in the dark. They got lost in Mud Creek Canyon. And they actually had to bivouac overnight before being rescued the next morning by Forest Service rangers and the sheriff's office.
Thank goodness the human rescue teams were there.
Seriously. And the sheriff explicitly called their reliance on AI a, quote, critical misstep. But I have to raise a direct pushback here.
Okay, let's hear it.
Are we blaming the machine for human error here? I mean, if I ask a magic 8-ball how to pack for a blizzard, is it really the 8-ball's fault when I freeze?
Well, the 8-ball doesn't have a multi-billion dollar marketing budget telling you how smart it is.
Fair point, fair point.
But this raises an important question. It shows how easily humans offload critical survival math to language models because the interface feels so authoritative.
Yeah, it talks to you like an expert.
Right. But we have to remember that the existing human systems, the rangers and local sheriffs, were the ones that ultimately saved them. It proves we cannot solely rely on digital wayfinding.
Right. Gemini failed on the mountain because it didn't know its own limits. It didn't know when to say, I don't know.
Exactly.
But what if an app is specifically designed to know exactly when to step back and hand you over to a human?
The telehealth model.
Yes. This brings us to a new partnership between the Brighton app and Open Loop Telehealth. They track a user's daily mood through AI conversational journaling.
Cool.
But if the AI detects acute distress, it surfaces the 988 suicide and crisis lifeline immediately.
It acts as a safety net.
Right. And if the user just needs regular help, they can book a paid session with one of Open Loop's 16,000 licensed therapists right there in the app.
It seamlessly hands off to a human professional.
Exactly. And in a preliminary pilot at Worcester Polytechnic Institute, they showed a 36.1% drop in depression symptoms and a 15.3% drop in anxiety.
Those are massive numbers.
So what does this all mean? To me, it's thrilling. It's an AI acting as a tripwire rather than pretending to be the doctor.
It is a great model, but I do want to provide a little calming counterbalance here.
Sure.
Those massive percentage drops in anxiety and depression, they are self-reported and preliminary.
Ah, right. Not peer-reviewed yet.
Exactly. They are pending a formal, randomized, controlled trial. But, having said that, the foundational design is worthy of praise.
The handoff part.
Right. The AI does the daily habit tracking, the low-stakes work, and the licensed human clinician makes the actual medical decisions.
Right. A clean handoff, just like the airplane autopilot we talked about. So to recap this incredible journey today, we went from a 29-point test score gap showing daily bots hurt learning to blanket school bans in NY and LA.
And Virginia's 49-page rule book trying to outlaw algorithmic flattery.
Yes. Plus the tech giant stalemates over Siri, a totally botched AI packing list on Mount Shasta, and finally an AI app that actually knows when to call a human therapist.
It really covers the whole spectrum of human AI trust.
It does. And for you listening right now, whether you are drafting an email, packing for a weekend trip, or checking in on your mental health, the through line is so clear. AI is a co-pilot. It is not an autopilot. You must remain the pilot in command.
Absolutely. But, you know, I'd like to leave you with one final kind of unexplored thought on that.
Oh, all right. Let's hear it.
Throughout all six of these stories, there's a huge assumption. The assumption is that the AI will always be there.
Oh.
Right. To draft the essay, to check the mood, or map the hike.
Yeah.
But as we deeply integrate these tools into our cognitive survival, what happens if the startup goes bankrupt?
Or the server crashes.
Exactly. Yeah. Or the tech giant simply unplugs the server. Mm-hmm. What are the withdrawal symptoms of an outsourced mind?
Wow, if the autopilot unplugs, do we even remember how to fly? That is a haunting thought to end on. Well, that wraps up our deep dive for today. Thanks for being here, and until next time, keep your hands on the yoke. We'll see you then.